Welcome to Life and Sirens, Behind and On the Scene, a podcast by first responders. We're your hosts, Sophie,
Jamie,
and Aubrey.
The content provided in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any medical institutions, emergency medical services, or healthcare organizations. Patient privacy is a top priority, and all discussions involving real-world emergency situations are de-identified and altered to ensure confidentiality. Always consult with a qualified healthcare professional or your local EMS protocols before making any decisions regarding patient care or medical practices. Listener discretion is advised, as some topics may include discussions of real-world emergency situations.
Welcome to another episode of Life and Sirens. This is going to be a new thing we're going to be doing. We kind of thought it up because a couple months back, Aubrey and I got subpoenaed. and we thought it was an important thing to talk about. So it's a new series or type of episode we'll be doing called Scene to Subpoena. Today, we're going to be talking about documentation on gunshot wound calls. And we'll also be talking about this at the McSwain Trauma Conference in May. Well, it is May now. So May 15th.
Right around the corner.
And I decided to redo the entire presentation today because I hated it.
In perfect so fashion.
Which isn't crazy because one time I went to speak at a conference in an entire different time zone and I redid my presentation 3 hours before I had to do it.
Yep.
It's pretty weird and pretty normal for
so
me.
So I would be worried about you if you had your whole presentation done like way beforehand.
I did.
Well, yeah, but like, if you didn't like redo
yeah,
it.
Like, if you have not changed it within a couple hours of giving it, then it's not yours.
I'm just really bad at commitment.
I think you just have ever-evolving ideas, and you come up with something better, and you're like, why would I not put that in there?
Well, and especially when I travel to another subculture. Do you know what I mean? Like, every agency and every, like, conference has its own subculture. I'm like, ooh. There are so many things that I need to put in here that I didn't even know existed right now.
Like, are you saying op site or tagoderm?
Oh. That's the biggest question.
See? I'm not saying either.
What are you calling it?
Tagoderm.
Tagoderm.
A tagoderm.
A tagoderm.
A tagoderm.
What are you saying, Yonker? Or Yonkour?
Oh, not the Yonkour.
Oh, I
that's
can't.
That's a thing.
I know.
Yonker. No, I'm saying neither. I'm saying Yonker. Decanto.
Oh. Decanto. Ooh.
All right, we've gone a little off topic
already.
Sorry.
So this isn't just about writing reports, obviously, scene to subpoena. It's just kind of highlight kind of how big of a deal your documentation can be. So we'll break into things. I guess we'll talk about why we feel like we are, I was going to say authorized, but we're qualified to talk about this. We work in a area that has a lot of GSWs. We have been in a lull, but it's kicking back up. So, if you work in our system, GSWs aren't rare. They're kind of a weakened normal. Whether they are self-inflicted, domestic, or otherwise, we do tend to get GSWs semi-frequently. And we have all at least been subpoenaed a time or two. I know I've been subpoenaed several times, and it is scary. So we thought we should talk about it.
And the thing about GSWs is that you get subpoenaed, and a lot of times they plead before you ever go to court.
Which is
but
ideal.
If they don't plead before you go to court, then it's a long run. Like, you're going to be in it for a long while.
Why do you look so cute right now?
You look comfy.
She's all posted up. You look like such an official podcaster.
All right,
so sorry.
This is why we got to start video recording. But also, then they would see how many dips are on our table.
And they'll be like, why are there dips every time?
They should know about the dips. If they're not just having dips with their best friends, they're really fucking up.
I know.
You're right.
My bad.
When we go to the hot ones, I really just want to bring some queso instead
bring
of eating
queso.
Wings.
Also, like you can have this milk. So instead of milk, maybe you can just have queso.
Yeah.
All right. We tried to give you guys a little glimpse of what it's going to be like, and we failed. So sorry about that.
You'll just have to find out,
yeah.
I suppose.
Speaking of today, let's talk about why we're here.
Oh, yes. GSWs.
So why this matters in our system, I guess we'll just start from there and why we think it's important to talk about.
So why are we even talking to you about this, and are we qualified? We think so. Our system has a pretty high frequency of GSWs. So I would say they're a little bit less common now than they used to be, but it's ramping back up. You know, it's summertime. Things get a little wild. We have also all been subpoenaed. Soph has gone all the way through, like, meeting with the prosecution. I've been called, like, to the stand. And Aubrey's gone through the subpoena process. And so we have experienced this in our careers and had some buddies that have experienced it far more frequently than we have.
Yeah, we at least understand it from the provider aspect. And it can be really, really scary. But just remember, you're not the one on trial.
So. Yes, yes. This would be a whole different discussion if it was what to do when you are being litigated.
I don't think we'll hopefully ever be qualified to talk to you
about
that.
I hope not. I really hope not.
So let's start with the very basics, right? You get dispatched to a GSW. You can already assume out the gate that whatever scene you're about to walk into, whatever procedures you're about to do, and especially whatever run ticket you're about to have to write is going to be a legal document used in a court case.
Right. And at least for our agency, I've never been subpoenaed anywhere else, but on my current agency, like, they will send you your administrators. They send us the subpoena with our run ticket.
Yeah.
Attached to it.
Yeah, which is nice because then you have your reference point.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Which it is gonna come in handy, especially I know that, like, either you don't do a lot of GSW calls and that was a whirlwind and you're just like, holy crap, what just happened? And you don't remember because it was just like the craziest thing you've ever done. Or you do so many GSWs that you're just like, oh, another GSW, which one was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like those are the two extremes you're going to find.
Yeah.
Absolutely. When talking about, like, what to document and things you write down, this may be a little bit premature, but I think medics end up in a really unique position because you see the scene prior to first responders destroying it.
Yeah.
So we get there and we see the scene before we start moving these people. Which puts you in a unique position, especially because you can see it kind of unbothered before forensics get there. And sometimes they will use you in court as, like, the first person to see the scene, like, where were things. And if you document that well, it's going to help you later on.
Yeah. And obviously it's not necessarily your job to be a detective, and it's not, like, imperative that you put these things in your narrative, but I do think it's important, at least when I'm on these calls, to put exactly, in any case, but especially in these cases, how you found the patient and where you found the patient.
Yeah.
Like, were they outside on the sidewalk? If they're just, you can't just be like, we found the patient lying on the sidewalk. Okay, let's give a little more detail. Patient was laying prone on the sidewalk. People were screaming. It was a very noisy scene.
People were telling us to run.
That did happen to Aubrey and I did document it.
You did.
People were screaming at us to run, but the patient was, like, two strides away from us.
Did
we were, like,
run
where? No, if I run, I will fall down.
We also didn't run away, which was the most important part, I think.
They meant...
That is true.
Man, did they mean, like, run to the patient?
Yeah, they were telling us to run.
Thank goodness.
I thought they were trying to tell y'all to run away.
No, they were mad at us.
No, they were telling us to move faster.
But yeah,
we were already
run.
Moving fast.
We don't run.
Yeah, it was very interesting, but, I mean, reading our narrative back, it was like, oh, we know exactly what happened, the whole thing, down to the kind of vomitus that covered our monitor.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, when we got subpoenaed for this call, I was just about to be done with medic school, but I was still an EMT. So Soph ran this call, wrote this run ticket. When we got subpoenaed about a year later, I went back and read it, and I obviously had never, I mean, I signed it, so I've seen this run ticket before, absolutely, but I had never read the narrative in its entirety until we had gotten subpoenaed, and I was able to read through that whole narrative, and I could remember every single detail of that call, even though I wasn't even the one that wrote it, and that's kind of the position that you want to put yourself in.
And I think that's important. You said it was a whole year later. There was one all of us were subpoenaed for, like, how long was it, Jim?
It was, like, 2 or 3 years, wasn't it?
I think it might have been 4.
Yeah.
It was long.
A long time, because it was a very, very high-profile case.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of moving
parts.
Yeah,
that one was shorter. That was probably two.
Two.
Because it was so high profile, it moved through the court system quicker.
She's talking about the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Was it really just... I thought we just got subpoenaed for that last year.
Did we really?
Yeah, it was just last year.
I go back to my previous answer.
It was like 4 years.
What is 4 years?
Yeah, it was... I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it really matters for you. Mm-hmm. You are not going to remember every detail, especially when it's just... chaos.
Oh yeah, the one that I just got subpoenaed for, or I had gotten subpoenaed for, and it went through and pled. But it was a GSW that was almost 4 years ago,
yeah.
And I thought I remembered so much about that call until I read my narrative, and what I actually remembered was false.
Yeah. Mm.
So like the age of the patient, I was wrong. The amount of gunshot wounds, I was wrong. All of what I remembered, like, at the present time, when I read my run ticket, I had remembered it incorrectly.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad that I wrote it the way I did.
And a lot of the times, you mentioned that they, like, pled down. This doesn't happen until, like, the night before.
Oh, yeah. I was already, I'd already gotten, like, vacation time, or not vacation time, but like...
PTO or whatever.
Yeah, PTO, to be able to go to court. It was, like, maybe 2 days before we were supposed to be in court.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like hours.
Yeah, it is. The one that I went to, literally, I was waiting. I was at the courthouse, mm-hmm. and I was in my uniform. I was waiting. The prosecutor, mm-hmm. she came in. She was like, okay, you're good. And I was like, what happened? She was like, they pled. I was like, minutes before?
Right. I cannot imagine being a prosecutor and working your ass off to litigate this case, and then they plead.
Mm-hmm. Like the day of.
And I mean, like, technically that's a win, like, for all intents and purposes it is, but like, dang, I would be like, no, I would did all this work, yeah. I was doing all these things, yeah. When we did all the prep, me and a couple of the officers, like, we did all the prep with the prosecution and we're ready to roll.
I know, I was so stressed. They put you through it.
Yeah, they really
and they
do.
Were like, even if it's you think it's the best narrative ever, they'll still be like, see this right here, they're gonna ask you a million questions about this and blah 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 and this blah blah, this is terrible. And I'm like, oh my god. So, just a couple of things I wanted to talk about when it comes to documenting specifically on GSW cases. Obviously, we've talked about, like, where you find your patient, how you find your patient, and what the scene feels like, and if there was anybody on scene before you. I think those are very important to document, especially if there were responders on scene before you.
Yes, and what those responders did.
Yes.
On scene before you got there.
Absolutely.
Did they
cut all their clothes off?
Did they cut all their clothes off? Did they move casings?
Yes.
Did they move a firearm?
That is all.
All of those things you need to know where and how and all the.
And you should never trust that another agency is going to document that, even if it has been done. So please, I recommend that you document those things.
Yeah, best you can.
Yeah. So just the other things I would say: entry versus exit wound documentation. Unless they are like, they shot me in the chest, point blank, and it came out my back. Okay. But otherwise, we cannot determine that on scene. So just keep that in mind. Junctional versus extremity wounds, I think, is kind of important. Not necessarily for the legal aspect, but it may be important as far as what your treatment looked like. Or like what the surgeon needs to do or what happens when we get to the hospital. And then also your vitals and things like that. Just make sure that if there's any erroneous vitals in there that, like, do not make sense, just I would document those, like, especially if you don't do anything about it. So they had, like, two low blood pressures in the, like, I don't even know, the 60s, but then it was fine. They're going to be like, well, did you do something about that? Why did it just get better? No, the patient had his hands raised in the air, you know, like.
Right. I feel like that happens a lot with O2 sats.
Yeah.
Like the probe kind of comes off sideways a little bit. And there will be an O2 sat when you import your vitals that says like 45.
Yeah.
And that was not true because they were satting above 94 the whole entire time, whatever. But if you don't catch that and document something about it or remove it or fix it, if you don't do something with that piece of information, it's
going to
look like. That patient had a period of hypoxia.
Yes. Did they die because they got shot, or did they die because you didn't do your job?
Because you let them be hypoxic, and that can become a problem for you later on down the road. So just make sure that you check those things.
And for the case in general, this did happen to someone we know.
Yeah, during like QA and stuff like that, reading run tickets, there's a lot of people that don't go back and filter their vital signs to make sure that they clinically represent the patient's condition.
Yes, please do that.
Vital signs are a tool, and you want to make sure you document, if you delete any or whatever it is,
why?
That you document why, or if you leave them in there, you document why. But you don't want them to paint a picture of that is not representative of how your patient was presenting.
Right. And you were talking about low O2 sats. There's other ways we can assess our patient for hypoxia and things like that. So if,
oh, for sure.
You know, it stops picking up because they have no blood left. I mean, you can say we monitored, you know, respiratory rate. We monitored their end tidal. We monitored other things
right.
to make sure. We applied O2 due to inability to assess.
And to obtain a sat. And you'll see, y'all know, because we all use end tidal so much, but the old ladies that breathe out of their mouth hole instead of their nose, and your end tidal is like, it's 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Like, those are like a good example of their end tidal is clearly not 4 because there's blood pressure is 130 over 82. But those are some good ones to like go through and check.
Shallow breathers, things like that. Sometimes it doesn't happen as much on LifePak. It absolutely happens like crazy on the Zoll. It'll be like respiratory rate when you have people on end tidal. It'll be like 4 breaths per minute, and then like 30 seconds later it'd be like 38 breaths per minute. Like, it just it sucks. I don't know why chaos. It's so bad on the Zoll. It's terrible. Also, one thing to keep in mind is if you had to stage.
Oh yeah.
It's a delay to patient care.
Yeah.
So just document, you know, we're staging with fire, we're staging for scene safety, crew safety, until PD.
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
Something also to remember is our definition of scene secure may be very different than law enforcement's definition of scene security. A lot of the times they feel that it is secure if they are there.
Yeah.
But that's not always safe.
True. And sometimes it kind of depends in all directions, because sometimes it's as secure as it's going to get.
Yeah. For us, we have a lot of ballistic gear.
Yeah.
But just keep that in mind if you don't. There's.
Yeah. And sometimes, like in rural counties, I feel like their definition of secure is so much more vague than ours is.
Yeah.
Because there may be one SO deputy that can get there in 20 minutes. Like, they may not even have an option.
Absolutely.
To really wait for secure. Secure may be enough that dispatch says the shooter left.
And body armor and helmets, like, we have those, but that's not mandatory.
Yeah. So a lot of people don't. So, use your better judgment and some discretion, but we recognize that scene secure means different things to different agencies, different people. Like, everybody kind of handles that differently.
Yeah, for sure. Just document why you were staging or why you felt it wasn't safe. Let's see. Use direct quotes if possible. And I know that some educators may say don't do that, but it's a lot more appropriate in a lot of scenarios to say, like, the patient stated, like, whatever it is, my brother shot me.
Yeah.
Then saying something weird and vague. Like, just say that. Like, I don't know how else to say that in my own words. I shouldn't be saying that in my own words.
Yeah, because they said it in their own words.
Yeah. So, like, that is important. Again, our job is not necessarily to document legal findings, but we could be the last person that patient's awake with.
That's a good point, is that we sometimes are the last person that they can talk to. And I have a really hard time with this. I am, like, a big kick PD out of my truck human, just because we already have so many people in there. But a lot of times PD will come and try to, like, do a patient interview, and I'm like, hey, bro, like, we're trying to make sure that they don't die. And I forget sometimes that may be the, like, PD's only chance to talk to them before they do die.
Yep.
And so I would like to try to be better about helping kind of fit them in so they can talk to them while we're doing what we're doing, if they're still awake.
Or at least coming in and standing in the truck with their camera on or whatever.
Yeah. And I think that I forget sometimes that this may be 3 years down the road, they may not be able to prosecute this case because I didn't let that officer talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I don't think that's something that I always realize.
And I think we all almost, I don't want to say this because I don't know that this is the best description, but almost a little territorial. You're like, back off. This is my patient. Like, I mean, I even did it the other night when they kept getting in the truck. I was like, We're literally performing a procedure. Can y'all stop opening the doors? For me, a good rule of thumb is the max amount of people in the truck are the max amount of seats there are. So you get a patient, you get a CPR chair, you get two people on the bench seat, and you get your captain's chair. That's four people plus your patient. That's a lot of people, and that's plenty.
Absolutely. It's you, your partner, and two helpers.
Yep. That's, if there's not a seat for you, you cannot be in here.
You cannot ride.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
And it's really, it makes it easier to explain to people, like, well, there's just not enough space. Like, if there's a seat, you can fill it. If there's not a seat, we need the space to work.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier to just explain it that way than to be like, get out of my truck. I don't like you.
Yes, it seems way nicer because I feel like I always have to be like, it's not that we don't like you guys. It's just that there's literally not enough room for all of us to move.
Right.
And a fireman knocked me down on that call.
Yeah, that did happen.
Knocked me down to hold an elbow.
Very important.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
There's one person per seat. That's all we got. And then if you're the cop, you can stand in the wheel well.
You know how our level one trauma center puts the Star of Life on the floor and that's where we stand?
I love that. I actually love it. People are like, oh, you got to stand on the Star. I'm like, put me on the Star.
I know where my spot is.
I know what's going to happen now.
Right? That's where I stand. I like the, I can expect it. It's consistent. I would like to now put police on the wheel well stair.
Yeah, this is where you're
And so I will be like, stand on your spot. Yeah. And that's where you can be. And that's where you can answer all your questions. And it's much nicer than what I normally do, which is like, shut that door, please.
Shut the door.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that when you start, if everybody starts doing it, eventually they'll catch on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I do not get yelled at if I stay right here. Yes.
This is my safe zone.
Stand on this junior badge.
Oh.
On the floor.
You're gonna be a little papa badge.
Just kind of stay in your lane. Which means we're not investigators, but we are documenters
for sure.
We have a bad narrative versus a good narrative here, and this is based on my narrative outline that I use, so this could be very different for how your agency prefers that you write your narratives, but we will just use this as an example.
All right,
was it, anybody like to read this?
Yeah, I'll read it.
All right.
Dispatch, general impression. Medic 2 responded immediately. Emergency traffic, the dispatch location for a reported gunshot wound. On EMS arrival to the scene, the patient was found lying on the sidewalk, alert and mild distressed, skin pink, warm and dry. Fire was on scene with the patient prior to EMS arrival. Chief complaint, I got shot in the leg. History of present injury / illness. Patient explained that he was walking home when someone, in quotes, came out of nowhere and shot him. No further details provided. Patient has a history of hypertension. No known allergies. Patient's living condition. Patient lives alone. Implanted medical devices, none. Code status, full code. Assessment. Patient was fully assessed en route to the ER. 1 centimeter wound noted to the lateral left thigh. No obvious exit. Minimal bleeding controlled with gauze prior to arrival. Lung sounds cleared bilaterally. PMS intact. No abnormalities noted to head, chest, abdomen. Cap refill less than 2 seconds. Vitals monitored. GCS-15. For full details, see vitals, forms, flowchart, and assessment tabs. Airway and oxygenation interventions. Patient airway remained patent without needing intervention. Patient maintained SpO2 greater than 94 without oxygen. Cardiac monitor placed on monitor due to trauma mechanism. Sinus rhythm, no ectopy, 12 lead unremarkable. No significant changes during transport. IV established, no medication given. For full details, see flowchart tab.
Bleh.
Patient assisted to cot, secured with rails, all rails and straps, transported non-emergency. Report given, care transfer to trauma team. End scene.
And that was the bad one.
Yeah, honestly, like, if I read this, it's not terrible.
But you honestly,
it covers all of your bases, but you will not, it will not, that will not help you remember anything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's why we made it so vague. Yeah. And also, we'll just, some highlights here. I hate this. First of all, patient lying on the sidewalk. How? Were they face down in a puddle of blood? Were they sitting up screaming at you? Whatever. Like, okay, how were they sitting or lying? In mild distress. Mm. I don't like when people put that. What does that mean?
Mild distress.
Like they were emotionally upset? Or they're just like breathing fast? Or like, you know what I mean? Right. What does that mean?
I think that a good rule of thumb is that if you're going to put a qualifying phrase like mild distress or severe distress or whatever it is, just write what that looks like to you instead. Yes. So if your first inclination is I'm going to write mild distress, instead right. Patient is leaned forward in a tripod position, breathing quickly, appears to be emotionally distraught.
Yeah.
I feel like you could phrase that in a way that to me sounds like mild distress, but now I actually know exactly what the patient looked like.
Yeah.
I like that better.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll put emotional distress too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. If they don't appear to be in physical distress, I'll put the patient is emotionally upset.
I put that sometimes too, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Patient is tearful.
Upset.
Yes. Chief complaint. I got shot in the leg. Okay. That seems appropriate. I also put on my real narratives underneath chief complaint, EMS impression.
I like that.
Just so it's like right there. Like, obviously you could be like, I have stomach pain and you find a STEMI. So like their complaint may not be exactly what the impression is. And I just like everything to be really clear.
Yeah.
So I just put it directly underneath.
Yeah, I normally do both, like patient stated, and then what I think the chief complaint is.
And it says 1 centimeter wound noted to left lateral thigh. I feel like that's fine.
Yeah.
It says no obvious exit, but I would just leave that out.
I would prefer it just say penetrating wound.
Yes, there's one wound to the thigh.
Because what kind of wound? Is it an abrasion? Is it a laceration?
Yeah. And honestly, I've had some sneaky exit wounds. So anything else you guys see in there that we should... I think it says no medications given. If you can tell me why this patient didn't get anything.
Yeah, no pain meds. Or...
And honestly, that is something they will ask you. They'll be like, why? They obviously weren't that sick or injured. You didn't do anything. They will do that.
They will. I had the craziest call, the one that I ended up actually going to court for. And they were so stuck on the fact that I did not further traumatize her by stabbing her with a needle and giving her Zofran. Because, like, at that point, just leaving her alone and letting her, like claim her own space at that point was what is much more beneficial for her. And
Zofran is not a life-saving medication.
Oh, yeah. All the defense was focused on was that I didn't give her Zofran.
Yeah, they get stuck on things like that.
And somehow that proved that she wasn't distraught.
Yeah.
And I was like, you guys are wild.
So if you do something, say why you did it.
Yeah.
If you don't do something, say why. So let's move on to our good narrative.
So for the good narrative, we have dispatch general impression. Medic 2 responded immediately emergency traffic to the dispatch location for a 911 call reporting a male shot in a suspected robbery. On EMS arrival, patient was found supine on the sidewalk outside a convenience store. Patient was alert but in visible distress, pale with rapid shallow breathing. Fire was on scene applying initial bleeding control measures. Chief complaint, in quotes, I was shot in the stomach. Help me. History of present injury or illness. Patient states he was approached by an unknown male who attempted to rob him. He reports hearing a gunshot and feeling immediate pain in the abdomen. Patient has no significant past medical history. No known allergies. Patient's living condition. Patient lives with mother, independent in daily activities. Implanted medical devices, none. Code status, full code. Assessment. Primary assessment revealed a single 2 centimeter penetrating wound approximately 3 inches left of the umbilicus. No other wounds noted. Bleeding was moderate with signs of early shock. Blood pressure was 92 over 64, heart rate of 122. Abdomen rigid and tender upon palpation. Lung sounds are clear bilaterally. No JVD or tracheal deviation. PMS intact with a cap refill of less than 2 seconds. GCS of 15 on scene. Secondary survey revealed no other injuries. Airway and oxygenation interventions. Patient maintained a patent airway. O2 via non-rebreather, 15 liters per minute administered for suspected internal hemorrhage and perfusion support. SpO2 improved from 91% to 97%. Cardiac monitor electrical interventions. Patient placed on monitor for trauma protocol. Sinus tachycardia, no ectopy. 12 lead performed and transmitted to receiving facility. No ST changes noted. Changes in patient condition. Patient remained alert, though tachycardic throughout transport. Blood pressure stable after fluids. Other interventions. 18-gauge IV established in right AC. 500 mLs of normal saline bolus given. Hemostatic gauze applied with pressure reinforced by trauma dressing. Transport and patient movement / positioning. Patient was log-rolled on the cot by a 3-person crew, placed supine and secured with straps and all side rails up. Emergency transport initiated, en route, trauma center, pre-alerted. Transfer of care. Patient delivered directly to trauma bay, full report given to trauma team, including scene observations, wound location, and interventions, signature obtained.
And that is not even how detailed mine was for our last.
Yeah.
I still feel like that's the bare minimum right there.
Yeah, I think that this is, for it to be considered like a decent narrative, I think that this is the absolute minimum that you could do.
Yeah.
Like, but I still think that, like, this is good. This clearly paints a picture. Like, it answers all your questions. I still think that there is, you can be more thorough. But sometimes this is the best that we can, like, really ask of people to do, especially depending on, like, your volume and your service and, like, your interest.
Yeah.
We really just like to just write a story down.
I wish I could post my one from Mars.
Yeah.
I
know. We just really dig into it. Yeah. But some people don't want to write a 4-page narrative.
Right.
But this is appropriate if you are one of those humans.
I agree. And we're going to do a blog post on the website associated with this episode. We can add this.
We can put both on there so you can kind of have a perspective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Legal perspectives. What happens after the chart? When does the chart become evidence? Subpoenas. What you need to know.
Ooh.
So this is like a hill I will die on, and people love to fight me on the internet about this. Ready? Here's an example of some problematic language.
Mm.
Patient appeared intoxicated.
Burner.
What you should say is why you think that. So don't say patient appeared intoxicated. You can say the patient stated, I'm
drunk.
Three sheets to the wind.
Yep.
But patient has slurred speech. And maybe this is pushing it to me. I don't like putting this.
Mm-hmm.
But patient smelled of alcohol. Or there was alcohol containers on scene. That one's okay, I think. But
I will do smelled like of alcohol when it is very clear.
Yes.
Because like, not just like, do you smell it? I kind of smell it. Like when you were like, oh, that's bourbon.
Yeah.
Right? Like this person smells like tequila.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will write smelled of alcohol when it is like very clear.
It's grossly evident. Yeah. Because I feel like the first thing someone's going to ask you in court is, what does alcohol smell like?
I'll be like,
Lord knows, I can't say.
It smells bad.
I'll be like, it smells like alcohol.
Exactly.
It smells like itself. Actually, I would say it smells like itself, which means it's really hard to confuse with another odor.
Yeah.
Boom.
Got
I would still be like,
defense
I don't know.
Defense can't get me.
They might be able to get most of us.
But they will ask you if you put a patient appeared intoxicated. They will ask you what qualifications you have to determine intoxication.
And not really.
And it will just get really annoying.
Yeah. So just be careful with that kind of language.
Even just like, when does a chart become evidence?
And as soon as they
request it.
Request it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as soon as they know that it's something they need.
Which could be 5 days or 500.
Yeah.
You literally don't know.
And ideally, the subpoena will go to your place of work and they will notify you.
And they're always going to take EMS charts because ours is way more clear to the point and less convoluted than requesting someone's medical records from the trauma center. So,
yep.
Yeah, true.
Just reality of it.
For sure.
The other thing we could touch on is like chain of custody. So like any kind of cut clothing or personal effects. Like the other night we had a call where our patient was not going to be able to maintain custody of anything because he was unresponsive. PD said, can we take all of this? Yes. Take
Please.
It from me. Get it out of here.
Please
Let
do.
Them take it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they made sure to establish a clear chain of custody because they knew that this was going to court.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So whatever your protocols and your region or service are, do that. One time I had to cut a man's boots off. Like, I had to cut them off.
Oh, yes,
you know, it was in
fun.
His boots.
Cocaine.
Whiskey.
You know, I just snatched whiskey out of a man. Well, no, it was Fireball.
That was his,
oh, yeah, it was whiskey.
That was his
yeah.
robe pocket.
I literally was like, why are these boots not coming off? Because there was whiskey in them,
whiskey
wedged
in
there.
Yeah.
Damn.
Said,
evidence, though.
Just remember that I know our first priority is obviously patient care, and we are there for the patient and to care for them and life-saving interventions. But in these scenes where there's obviously a legal aspect to them, we are still all a team.
Yeah.
Even law enforcement. We are all working together for the same goal. We just have different parts of it. So remember that as soon as you get involved in patient care that is involved in a crime, your care is part of a chain of evidence. Don't let sloppy charting break that chain.
And just remember that sometimes part of caring for your patient is making sure that you don't make it harder to prosecute whoever did this to them later on down the road.
Absolutely.
Because like this, even if you do absolutely everything perfectly, we all know that people still die. And yeah. So if this patient does die, but your chart was trash and the scene was such a mess and the chain of custody with like clothing and evidence was a disaster, then like they can't prosecute this case. And so just remember that that's also part of caring for them, is making sure that in the event that there is a negative outcome, that their family or, you know, whoever it is can still get justice for what's happened.
Yes. Patients who are victims of crimes, you have to obviously balance clinical with legal, but also ethical. So, like, you really are doing them an ethical justice by making sure you're doing your job well.
Absolutely.
Obviously, we have this variation of L chart, D chart that we use. I know that everybody is different, but it is important, I think, to get in the habit of doing everything the same way every time.
Yeah.
So that when you have the high priority cases like this, it's not...
For sure. Have a process.
Yeah, for sure.
The way that I got good at writing run tickets, and you guys are both much better than I am.
I don't think so.
Oh, I think so. Y'all are just so systematic. But the way that I got good at it was honestly writing codes.
Yeah.
Because you have to be so systematic with codes, and you have to make sure that you get every single piece of like assessment and everything you've done. Your secondary has to be spot on. Like my codes were where I really learned how to be thorough, and that's where I kind of built my like system for how to write all my other run tickets.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. If you're going to approach a patient and approach patient care in a very systematic way, which you should be, then it's crazy to think that you wouldn't document it the same way. So the next time you're writing a GSW narrative, ask yourself, if this chart stood alone, would it tell the whole story? Because it might have to.
Because you might not remember that call.
And you probably won't.
Yeah.
4 years later.
This has been Life and Sirens, produced by three nerds trying to bring you content that you might actually care about.